Welcome and thank you all for holding. I would like to inform participants that your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question and answer portion. To ask a question at that time, please press star one. Today's conference is also being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect. I would now like to turn the call over to Ellen Grant. You may begin.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ellen Grant, and I'm the branch chief for CDC's News Media Branch. I wish to thank you all for joining us for this call to answer questions about the response to the water contamination occurring in areas of West Virginia, as well as our work with the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources. To answer your questions, we have with us Dr. Vikas, and that's spelled V-I-K-A-S, Kapil, and that's spelled K-A-P-I-L. He is the chief medical officer for the Agency for Toxic Substance and Disease Registry, as well as for the National Center for Environmental Health. At this time, I will be turning it over to Dr. Kapil to address any questions that you may have. Operator, I believe we're now ready to take our first question.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please unmute your phone and press star one. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. Again, to ask a question, please press star one. If you would like to withdraw a request, please press star two. One moment, please. And our first question comes from Mark Dredgem with Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Thank you. Dr. Kapil, can you just run through exactly why you came up with this one part per million as being safe? Obviously, there's not a lot of information about this chemical. How did you come up with that standard?
Dr. Kapil, could you answer that question, please?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me, everyone? Ellen, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Yeah. Mark, thank you for that question. First of all, CDC, as many of you probably know, is not a regulatory agency. So the guidance that we provide is provided for public health purposes as part of public health activities. So to that extent, CDC guidance is not a standard per se, but we do provide guidance based on best available information regarding events like this. So the question that Mark asked about the one part per million screening level is a very good question, and it may be helpful to all of you to get a little context on this. So I will start trying to provide that. As Mark mentioned, there are relatively few studies on this particular chemical, MCHM, that we've been working with, dealing with here in the West Virginia spill. And this is not an unusual circumstance. There are, a number of chemicals, thousands of chemicals in use worldwide, and many of those chemicals sometimes have not been studied in a complete way in terms of being able to find human toxicologic information, human epidemiology studies. And many of the studies that we're often left with are animal studies. And that was certainly the case in this event with MCHM. So what we typically do in those cases is we use whatever information we do have, and we try to use that animal information, that animal data, to then extrapolate from that what might be sort of acceptable exposure levels in humans. So I will give you a little bit more background specifically on what we did in this case. So in this case, as I mentioned, we had availability really of just a couple of animal studies at the time this response began and very early on in this response. And we used that information to begin our assessment of what might lead us to a screening, an acceptable screening value for drinking water. So these calculations, when we do them, we use what are called safety factors. And the safety factors are necessary because we have to account for the uncertainty related to extrapolating data from animal studies to humans. So, for example, in this case, we applied a safety factor because we only had animal study to deal with to draw data from. So we applied a safety factor for that conversion from animals to humans. Similarly, we also apply a safety factor because all people are not the same. So there is person-to-person variability or human variability within the human population. So, for example, sensitive populations like the elderly or pregnant women, you know, those populations are very different from young adults, just as an example. So we apply another safety factor for that person-to-person variation. And then the third issue here is that there is really not that much data available. So the number of studies is very limited. So for that reason as well, we applied a third safety factor to account for the uncertainty in that regard. So once we did that, we came up with this calculation of a screening value of one part per million based on all of that data. Now, the people will often ask them, what number do you start with as you extrapolate down? And that's a very important question as well, because the number that we started with in this case was that one of the studies provided us data from animal from the animal study was a what we call a no observable effect level. So we started with a number at which the animals had no observable effects in terms of the dose that the animals received. And then from that, we extrapolate backwards using these safety factors to come up with the one part per million screening value recommendation. I hope that answers your question, Mark, and I hope to clarify some of the background for the other folks in the room.
Our next question comes from Ann Thompson with NBC News. Your line is open.
Thank you. Dr. Capel, I have a couple of questions. First of all, what was the number that you started with, the no observable effects number? How many studies have there been about MCHM? When were they done, and what did they look at?
And thank you for that question. You know, we have, when we first began this response, we really only had access to a couple of studies. One, the no observable effect level study that I mentioned, and the second was a study that we call an LD50 study, which actually looks at mortality among animals. So obviously it's better to begin with a number that doesn't look at mortality, but actually looks at something like what we did find, which was the no observable effect level. That's actually better. There are a few other studies available, but we didn't feel that they were directly applicable to this situation. For example, a skin study, which looked at skin doses in animals, for example. So we were particularly interested in ingestion. So we really just have that no observable effect level study and the LD50 study, the mortality study in animals, that we had access to early on in this response. Now, there are efforts underway with a number of our federal partners. We're working very closely with a number of federal partner agencies and our own folks, EPA and others, to try to locate additional information on this chemical. So that process continues, and as we get additional information, we will use that information as it becomes available. We are working also with our other federal partners to try to figure out some way to make some summaries of the available studies available. So we're in the process of working on that.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Comes from Ken Ward with Charleston Gazette. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I was hoping that you could walk through us, tell us what the no observable adverse effect level you used was, what was the number, and then walk us through, slowly if you could, the math for how you got from that figure to one part per million as the screening level in this situation.
Sure. And I'm sorry, I think one of the earlier questions actually specifically asked that question. I think the previous individual, perhaps Anne, asked that question. And the no observable effect level in the NOEL study was 100 milligrams per kilogram. And so that's the number that we began with, and we extrapolated back from that. The math is... I actually almost need a blackboard to go over that with you, but I think I can try to easily explain it, and it's sort of intuitive, I think, if you sort of try to think about it on a conceptual basis. We started with the 100 milligrams per kilogram number because that was the no observable effect level, and as the terminology suggests, that's the level, that's the dose given to the animal that did not result in any observable effects. And then what we do is we apply those safety factors that I mentioned earlier. The safety factors, each of them is basically a factor of 10. So you apply the safety factor of 10 for the issue of animal to human extrapolation. And then we apply the safety factor of 10 for the issue of the interperson variability, the variability for person to person, and then finally we apply the safety factor of 10 again for the issue of the fact that there just aren't that many studies, the limited number of studies. So that brought us to overall the uncertainty factor that was applied of 1,000. It's 10 times 10 times 10. And when you do that calculation, then you have you come up with a part per million level of one part per million.
If I could follow up just on that, how do you get from 100 milligrams? Could you walk us through how you went from 100 milligrams to a part per million number, explaining both how you went 100 and then the 1,000 figure, and took it to parts per million? The math there doesn't seem to make sense.
So the no observable effect level, and again, I don't want to get into this in gory detail. If you'd like, we might even be able to send this to you. Maybe afterwards we can get some your information, and I can send it to you. But basically, the no observable effect level is a milligram per kilogram level,
mm-hmm.
And then you can apply body weight to that, and then you can divide that by the uncertainty factor as well as the intake the estimated intake in liters.
Well, if you could walk us through that, because I think there's some confusion among members of the public who are looking at these figures. That if you take the 100 and apply the 1,000 to it, you end up with 0.1 milligrams per kilogram, which would be 0.1 parts per million. And you seem to be saying that there's an important step in there where you take into account the body weight and the intake of water, and it might be helpful for the intelligent people here in West Virginia to be able to understand how you did that, since they're the ones drinking the water.
So if you, yes, I can do that for you.
Thank you.
If folks are interested, I think we can do that for you.
Okay, next question, please.
I was hoping he was going to actually answer that question.
Is he going to do it now?
Yes, please.
Now, Dr. Capel?
I actually will need a little time to pull the calculations, and I can come back to that if you'd like, if that's okay.
I think we would, because okay. We have other questions.
Yeah, let's go ahead with those, and in the meantime, I'll pull the calculations.
Thanks,
the next
sir.
Question, thank you, comes from David Gutman with the Charleston Gazette. Your line is open.
Well, first of all, I'd really like the answer to the last question. But in the meantime, if you're talking about body weight, which is factored in at some point, how come the one part per million level applies to everybody equally? Why is there no dosage, for instance? It's my understanding that the EPA water standards always, you know, always have a dosage attached to, you know, 5 liters per day per kilogram of body weight or something. So why is there no dosage or no mention of body weight in the limit?
So the amount of water that's taken in is an assumption that's made in this calculation. So in that sense, if you actually take in less water, the number actually increases. Does that make sense?
No. What number?
The overall recommendation, the overall screening value.
So if you only drink a teaspoon of water, for instance, then that one part per million goes way up, is what you're saying?
Correct, because what we actually are doing is we're estimating the. You know, I think that question actually will be answered as well when I walk you through the calculations.
Well, okay. Well, how much water at one part per million can a person drink in a day? Or can a person absorb in any way through their skin, through washing, through drinking?
So the absorption through the skin is a totally separate issue, and the no observable effect level that we're talking about is for ingestion. Okay, so the way this calculation has been done is that for adults, well, let's start with children first. So at zero, for a 10 kilogram person, which is a child, okay, the NOEL is 100 milligrams per kilogram per day. And then to that, we apply an uncertainty factor of 1,000. Okay, so that brings us to 0.1 milligrams per kilogram.
Okay.
Okay, I guess we can revisit this when Dr. Capel kind of recaps the pending questions. Let's go to another question, please.
Thank you. Dave Boucher with the Charleston Daily Mail. Your line is open.
Thank you. When did you make the decision that the water was no longer advisable to be drink for pregnant women to drink? And what made you decide that it was no longer a good idea?
So the one part per million advisory, the screening level of one part per million, is a level that is not likely to be associated with any adverse health effects. However, as we indicated earlier, as we discussed earlier, there is very little information on this chemical. And in general, for reproductive exposures to pregnant women, we generally recommend that pregnant women have, to the extent that it's possible, minimize their exposures to these chemicals in these kinds of circumstances. So that is really a recommendation that's being made out of an abundance of caution for pregnant women. However, we stand by the one part per million screening level that we have recommended.
Well, what changed from that level to what made you decide that it was no longer safe for women, and when did you decide that it was no longer a good idea for pregnant women to drink it?
We provided that guidance to the state yesterday. However, we stand by the one part per million screening level. The recommendation related to pregnant women is really a recommendation out of an abundance of caution.
I understand that, but was there not caution when the chemical went in the water?
Sorry?
Was there not caution a week ago when the chemical leaked in?
Well,
or that night when there was 300,000 people who couldn't drink it?
You know, this is a dynamic and evolving event, and we have provided a screening level which we feel is a level that's not likely to be associated with any adverse health effects, and even in that circumstance for pregnant women, it's a common practice in reproductive environmental health that we would recommend levels be minimized to the extent possible.
Next question, please.
Thank you. That comes from Ken Ward with Charleston Gazette. Your line is open.
Two things. One, I want to be clear. We're being told that before this call is over, you will explain to us how you got from 0.1 milligrams per kilogram to one part per million, explaining to us clearly why the number isn't 0.1 parts per million.
Yes.
And secondly, could you please explain exactly what health effects you were looking at, whether you were looking at lethality, or whether whether you were looking at cancer, whether you were looking at reproductive or developmental problems, exactly what impacts were you considering? And please do answer the first question. I want to make sure that we get an answer on how you got from 0.1 milligrams per kilogram to one part per million.
This is the moderator. I guarantee we will leave time to answer that burning question that many of you asked. I think for the sake of moving this forward, let's answer your second question and let Dr. Capel wrap up with the final response. Okay.
So the question was about the health endpoints. The study that we used for developing the screening value, the NOAEL study, looked at a number of different health outcomes. However, we only used the dosing number for the no observable effect, as I mentioned earlier. The other outcomes that were evaluated in that and a couple of the other studies that are available included hepatic effects, included renal effects, and also the skin studies, as I mentioned earlier. However, those were not the effects. Of course, no effects were seen at the no observable effect level. There are no studies that we're aware of at this time that focus on either on cancer endpoints or on reproductive health effects.
Okay, next question, operator, please.
Thank you, and once again, if you do have a question, please press star 1. Trip Gabriel with the New York Times, your line is open.
Oh, hi, thanks. You know, residents of Charleston are extremely suspicious at this point about the safety of their water, even after the drinking ban has been lifted. I think the very fact we're having this press conference today, rather than several days ago, suggests there's been a failure by health authorities and other public officials to communicate effectively about its safety. Why has that been the case?
I'm not in a position to answer that question, sir. And I'm actually you're trying to explain some of the scientific issues, and I think I'll just leave that there.
Why didn't we have this conversation though 3 days ago at the time the ban was being lifted?
You know, this is a dynamic and moving event, and There are many things happening, and we are, you know, we're trying to do our best. We certainly do understand that people are concerned. There are uncertainties. There's little known about this material, and we are trying to work as closely as we can, and you know, with our state partners, with the Environmental Protection Agency, with our other federal partners, trying to provide you know, whatever information we can develop.
Operator, we have time for one more question, and then we'll allow Dr. Capel to wrap up with the overall question that many of you asked.
Thank you. That comes from Miriam Falco with CNN Medical News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you, and forgive me, I wasn't on until a few minutes ago, so I'm sure you've mentioned all of this, but to follow up on the question that was just given, the recommendation that pregnant women may want to seek alternative sources of water and not the drinking water was interpreted by the local health department as saying, the CDC is saying, out of abundance of caution, do not drink the water, and I'm not quoting, but it was a little stronger. That raised the concern level. So here you're saying it's okay to drink, and now you're saying, but pregnant women can't. And if pregnant women can't, then why should a 7-year-old child drink it? What, in simple words, are you trying to say to the folks who are dealing with not trusting the water that they have available to them?
You know, that's a good question. We face this kind of thing in environmental public health frequently. There are uncertainties related to chemical exposures. Issues there are questions that we can't always answer, and we do our best to assess the risk to affected people, and we can't always answer all the questions that people have, at least not initially in these kinds of circumstances. So we have very carefully looked at the available data. We have applied very significant safety and uncertainty factors to that. We have what we think is a level that is a screening level that is not associated with any adverse health effects. However, even in those circumstances, and I mentioned earlier, we don't have reproductive health studies done on this compound, and that's also very not an uncommon situation that we have circumstances where people have potential exposures, and we don't know if those have any reproductive health issues associated with them. And in those circumstances, when we don't know, out of an abundance of caution, we do often make these kinds of recommendations for pregnant women. Having said that, I do want to point out that the uncertainty factors or the safety factors that we apply do, in fact, account for sensitive populations. So the uncertainty factors do include some consideration of that, and that's why that one part per million is generally for the population as a whole is considered a level not likely to be associated with any significant health impacts. However, it's really just out of an abundance of caution for people to consider using bottled water for pregnant women. I hope that answers your question, but you know, there are uncertainties, and I think we're just trying to understand and appreciate people's concerns.
But are you saying don't drink the water?
As far as we know, the levels that we have seen most recently are actually declining, the zones are being open. You know, ultimately the decisions are regarding the drinking water advisory are being made by the state with the guidance that we provided, and we stand by the one part per million guidance, and we think that that's a number not likely to be associated with any adverse health effects. So I think that that based on the water sampling data that we have seen, we think that allowing the water to be used for drinking and cooking and all the other things based on the levels we have seen is perfectly appropriate.
This concludes the question and answer portion of this call. At this time, I would like to give Dr. Capel an opportunity to respond to the question that many of you had, and also to provide any closing remarks that he would like to share. Dr. Capel?
So, again, the question I think that people are asking is how you get from the no observable effect level of 100 milligrams per kilogram to the one part per million recommendation. And the way that we do that is we apply three uncertainty or safety factors, one from animal to human of 10, second one for human variability, which I mentioned, also a factor of 10, and a third one for the inadequacy of the data or the database, also a factor of 10. So when we multiply that, we get 10 times 10 times 10, which is 1,000. Then from that point, we take the 100 milligrams per kilogram, no observable effect level, divide that by 1,000, and we come up with 0.1 parts per million. For a child at 0.1 milligrams per kilogram per day, times 10 kilograms, we're assuming a 10 kilogram child, and we also assume then, there are assumptions here, we also assume then that there is a 1 liter consumption for a child in a day, that gives you one part per million. So it's 0.1 milligrams per kilogram, okay? It's 10 kilogram child assumption, and you divide by 1 liter, basically, because that's the assumption that that's how much water the child would drink, and you get one part per million. You can do a similar calculation for adults if you wanted to do that. Again, it would be 0.1 milligrams per kilogram per day, 70 kilograms, a 70 kilogram average adult. And then you can make an assumption for how much water that person would consume. So if you assume that that person consumed 3.5 liters of water, it would bring you again to one part per million. If you assume that they consume less water, similarly in the child, if you assume that they consume less water, it would get you to, again, one part per million or some higher number, and we just brought them all down to one part per million.
That'd be conservative.
And that's a conservative estimate based on water consumption. If folks would like, we can probably try to provide this information to folks after the fact at some point. We are trying to work with some of our partners to issue some more details, not only about the calculations, but also about the some of the studies that were utilized, and we may be able to provide some summaries hopefully in the near future of the studies as well as the calculations if people would find that helpful.
I think that would be extremely helpful, and we appreciate your willingness to pull this together. This is for our media folks. Once we obtain that information, we will send an email out to each of you with the background that you were seeking. This concludes our call, and I just want to thank you all for joining us. And if you have any additional questions, please feel free to call our main press office number. and that's 404-639-3286. And thank you, Dr. Capel, for agreeing to do this, and thank you all.
Thank you, Alwyn.
Thank you. This does conclude the conference. You may disconnect at this time.